You are tuned into Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.
All right, we are getting into our conversation regarding sibling dynamics with Elder Alois Nyamazana. He's going to be helping us understand if we're actually doing the right thing. Like, we're going to talk about what those politics are. We're going to talk about, you know, most of the stereotypes that we have about the firstborn and the middle child and the lastborn and all of that. What do those do to us as we're growing up? What do they do to our children as they're growing up, as we're raising them? Sometimes I wonder if, for myself, I wonder if I'm overburdening my firstborn, my eldest child, because she's a big girl. Like she's 10 years older than my youngest. So she ends up becoming sort of a built-in babysitter. And every now and then I'm like, I don't know if I'm doing the right thing. But anyway, the elder is going to help us understand exactly what we need to know about the birth position. Does it do anything? Does it mean anything for the children, how we should be raising them? Elder, good morning.
Good morning. How are you, my sister?
I'm doing very well. Thank you so much. Welcome to the program. Welcome back to Mid-Morning Empowerment. It's a pleasure to have you back on.
Thank you very much for having me.
So we have an interesting subject that we're discussing today as we're talking about taking care of our families, raising our children. There is this thing about the birth position, especially with us as Africans. I don't know about the rest of the world, but, you know, there's a lot placed upon being the eldest child in the family. Even more so if you're the eldest and a boy, that's like, you know, that's the best thing that could happen. But I'm just curious how these dynamics play out, how they affect children as they're growing up, how they affect the rest of the siblings, how they affect sibling dynamics and all of that.
Yeah, I think that's a very interesting subject there, Wongi. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's very true. The world over, actually, the birth position actually affect the person's personality, a person's behavior, and how they generally conduct themselves
really?
In life. Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So you notice that, like what you rightly said, even there are also gender implications around that. Mm-hmm. For example, if a person is a firstborn and a boy, in an African context, that mm-hmm. person automatically becomes the father of the house. Yes. So when important family decisions are supposed to be made, that person is supposed to be consulted, they sit in very important family meetings, and when the father passes away, automatically they take also the responsibility of the father. But before we even go to that, the way they are even raised, the firstborn,
yeah.
is different from the way the second ones and the third ones are actually raised.
Very true.
So, okay, you can go ahead.
Yeah, no, as you're saying that, I'm thinking about in my own family, I've heard my older siblings, I have an older brother and sister, they always have that comment. They always say that you guys, meaning me and my younger sister, were not raised by the same parents that we were raised.
So, yeah. Those differences are there, and they are very much pronounced. You know what happens? The family dynamics, when you know, the parents give birth to their first child.
Mm-hmm.
There's always that excitement,
yeah.
right? There's always that excitement. They are very cautious. They try everything to make sure that, you know, they raise a very good child.
Mm.
Even books on parenting, they buy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, they are a bit more strict. They try to mold the best version of the child that they've always been dreaming of.
Yeah.
So there's that much attention that is given to the firstborn. That's why you see even later in life, firstborns are likely to be leaders. They are likely to be very people who are, they pay attention to detail, very responsible people because of the parenting style that they go through.
Interesting. Okay.
Yes. And in our African context, there's actually that popular saying which says the firstborn is the deputy parent.
Yes, yes, exactly.
yes. It's because of their responsibility, because of the way they are nurtured at birth. They are given a lot of responsibilities. Parents actually watch over them so much. You know, their behavior is always scrutinized, you know, by the parents. Well, they want to have the best version of the child. But it's different from The second boy, the third boy, and the third born actually, and the fourth born, and even the last born.
Yeah.
You see that the middle, especially the middle ones, the parents normally tend not to give so much attention to them.
Eish.
And even in the family, they are hardly visible.
So true. It's so true. It's so true.
Yes.
So I wonder, like, if we can, let's focus on the firstborn for a moment now. When we talk about this added responsibility that they have, I was just telling the listeners, like, sometimes I wonder if I'm overburdening my 10-year-old because she ends up almost becoming like she's the babysitter of the family, because every time if we're busy, if the parents are busy, then she is the one who ends up having to watch her younger siblings. And sometimes I wonder if we're robbing her of her childhood because now she's, like you said, the deputy parent at the young age of 10 years old. And so I wonder, and I've heard other people as well, all the way into adult age, firstborns who talk about the burden that it seems to be the firstborn, where you're almost like the parent to your siblings. Is that a bad thing? Is that just the way things are? Is there a way that we can change, if we should at all change that?
I think there are some pros and cons.
Okay.
Around that. And some of these things, to be honest with you, we do this subconsciously.
Yes.
So I think what is important is for us to be very conscious about it. And one bad thing about this is, like what you rightly said, we can overburden the child.
Mm, mm.
You will find that perhaps the first born and the second born, maybe they just have a 2-year gap.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And so there's also that tendency of ignoring the fact that even if he or she is the first born, still the child.
Yes.
Yeah, so if you then start burdening them with looking after the other child, then it's a child looking after the other child. And they can actually even develop a negative attitude towards the other sibling, because that person will become a burden to them, is what I'm saying.
Right, right.
So if that is not properly managed, even, you know, there are some instances where, for example, you buy yogurt. There are two kids. We have the first born and the second born.
Yeah.
And to buy yogurt or something, chocolate or something sweet, or all those good things that children like, right?
Yeah.
And there's that tendency of saying, you know what, this is for the baby, referring to the second born.
Yes.
The second born. And the first one is then regarded as an elderly person.
Yes.
Yet they are still children.
Yes.
They are still a child. So in that regard, they then, it's actually, to me, it's unfair on them. We are like depriving them of their childhood.
Very true. And like you said, especially if the gap is so small, they're practically age mates, but they're being treated so differently from one another.
Yeah, but at the same time, the pros are that they're also being trained on how to be responsible people.
Very true. And
so for me, it's not to overdo. These things that I'm talking about, we have to do in moderation. In as much as we're training them responsibility, let's also be conscious of the fact that they are still children.
Very true. Very true.
Yes.
So then the other one here, the other person who likes a lot of attention in the family, is this one called the last born.
Yes, the spoiled one.
The spoiled one. And that's generally the understanding. That's generally the stereotype, that the last born is always the baby of the family. They get away with everything. I guess the joke is that by the time the last born comes, the parents are too old and tired to do anything about it. So they just let the child run their own life. So what do we need to know about raising the last born? How can we raise a last born who is not going to be that stereotypical spoiled child?
Yeah. That is the general assumption.
Yes.
To me, it is not. Yeah, that is the general assumption, in my view. But there are some last borns who are actually very responsible.
Very true.
But of course, in our African context, you know, like what you rightly say, sometimes it's because parents are tired or...
Yeah.
The dynamics for me is around, you know, if you don't have the other child who's coming after you, then it means that you are going to take some more time, you know, getting protection and attention from the parents.
Okay.
Yes. So for example, the first born in 2 years, they already have another child who's coming. Maybe 3 years, another child is coming. So the parents are no longer putting that much attention to them.
Yeah.
But for the last boy now, the attention can span for 6-7 years. Yeah, and there's also that natural, you know, tendency by parents to like a child closer to them, whom they can call their baby, you know, like the baby of the family. But the parents will always like that kind of a person, whom they can spoil, who is always closer to them, so they could do everything to make sure that the last born stays closer to them.
Yeah, you see,
so they do everything to protect that child. So in the end, that's why we then say they are spoiled, because they are getting so much attention from the parents for a very long period of time, even going into perhaps adulthood or teenager.
Yeah. I always say to my husband, when he feels like I'm babying the last born, I say, but this is my last one. This is the last time that I'm going to have this little person. So I'm trying to enjoy every moment that I can.
Yes.
Whereas with the older siblings, like you said, by the time they were this age, there was another one already on the way. So, you know, and what's interesting now, moving on to the middle child, in the case of my own family, my second child, I have three children. My second child was a last born for 6 years before my last child was born.
So
I always say that she's like a mixture of a last born. She still has the last born culture inside of her, but now she's a middle child.
So you will notice that last born children are attention sick. And you know what, Bong? What these things that are talking about, they even go beyond childhood. Yeah, it actually affects the person's life. I mean, personality for life. Yeah, so you see that first born in their life, they are natural leaders.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you look at it, those are the people that get things done.
Yes. Yes.
When at gatherings and companies and all those, they are the people that get things done because they were trained responsibility at a very tender age. Yes.
So what can we do for all the children now, so that the benefits that they get at whatever position they are, whether you're a firstborn, those benefits, how can they trickle down to the other kids? Whether you're a lastborn, how could those benefits go to the others? And even as I'm speaking, I can see I'm already ignoring the middle children. I'm talking about the firstborn and the lastborn.
Yes. So I think for me, it's about being conscious as a parent, you know, regarding what you want for your child, for your children. We need to take a very conscious decision or a plan. We need to have a plan in place, because really there's that danger of maybe focusing on the first child and neglecting the last or the middle. So we need to be very conscious, take some time to attend to all the children. You know, because, you know, I always tell people that parenting is like running an institution.
Okay.
So if you are doing parenting, you need to have a plan in place. And that plan should then guide how you deal with all your children. So if you have a plan in place, you then stick to that plan. It automatically means that you are not going to neglect any child based on their position, you know, death position in the family. Yeah. So for me, it's having a very clear plan, a very conscious and deliberate, you know, plan that you then implement, making sure that you are not neglecting these children.
Brilliant. Okay. So how now, as the children grow up, as they grow into adults, how do these dynamics play out? How do they show up in the people? Especially now, I want to focus a little bit on the middle child that we have not really spoken much about right now. How do those dynamics play up?
So let me start up with the middle child. The middle child, like what I said, they are normally ignored. Right? Because the parent is now more like experienced in childhood. I would give my example. I have three kids.
Okay.
And for our first born, to be honest with you, we did everything as parents.
Yeah.
I was just looking at it and I was preparing for this. All the books that we have on parenting, we bought them for our first child.
Yeah.
So we were so strict. But for the second and third, you know, the attention was more like jingling, sort of.
Yes.
So the third child usually are those neglected, where the parents, they are now more experienced. They now, for them, having a child is no longer something very, very, you know, exciting, like what we were doing for the first child.
Yeah.
So the middle children, they struggle for recognition in the family. Yes, there are those people who struggle for recognition, and they always find their way out for them, their presence to be felt.
Yeah.
And in the process, even when they grow up, they are usually peacemakers because they want to please everyone. Yes, they want to please everyone, and they are also not like spoiled babies.
Mm-hmm.
They are not cry babies most of the time.
Right.
Because, they are not cry babies, and they also get attention from both ends. They are getting attention from the elderly children, but also even from the... So in terms of how they do their things, they are more like balanced people, and
mm-hmm.
you call them more like peacemakers.
Mm-hmm.
They are more like mediators, you see?
Right.
And they are also responsible because everything that they do, they need to prove that they can do something.
Mm. Mm.
You see? So even in their academic life, in their, they are always trying to make sure that they come out, they shine, something like that.
Yeah.
So even in the so perhaps going back to your question, to say how does this then affect even the later life, to adult life?
Yeah.
So you will notice that, like what I said, for firstborn, it's mostly around being, they are more like leaders,
mm-hmm.
but even in their marital life as well.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
I'm trying to imagine a case of two firstborns who are married to one another.
Exactly. Two firstborns who are married.
Yeah.
If they don't get the control of the Holy Spirit. then that can be a very tough situation, because everyone is saying, is actually... If they are not like conscious,
mm-hmm.
they might also have that full of I know.
Yes.
That I know it all behavior.
Yes.
You know what I mean? So it's a family of leaders.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone is claiming to know.
Eish. Yeah, that can be tricky.
Yeah, that can be tricky. But if they are the people who are perhaps so deliberate in terms of managing their personality, they're very good emotional intelligence, then that means that family can also flow very smoothly because everyone is doing their part. They are taking their responsibility.
Interesting. Interesting. I like that.
Yeah, so the father is doing their work, the mother is doing their work, everyone knows their boundary, they're responsible and all those. That is if they have emotional intelligence. Because, you know, in psychology, there's what they call strength overdrive.
Okay.
So it's a strength overdrive is where you actually use your abilities more than what you're supposed to do.
Okay. That's interesting.
Yes.
So because you're a good leader, now you are leading, you're being too much of a good leader.
You're becoming too boss.
Yeah.
Even in the family, yes.
Right. Very interesting. Very interesting. And then I've always wondered, you mentioned earlier on about, especially within an African context, how as the children grow up, you know, the eldest child, especially if it's a boy, becomes sort of the man of the house. And more so when the father of the home has passed away, then he really takes over the father's responsibilities in the family. How does this work in situations where, for example, there is a brother, he's not the eldest, but suppose he's the only boy, but he's not the eldest. And maybe he's more educated than everyone else in the family. And, you know, he's still sort of looked to for guidance because of his level of education, because of his being male, in a family full of females. And now that the father has passed away, the responsibility still tends to fall on him, even though he might not be the eldest. How does that then play up? Suppose this is a middle child. Suppose this boy is the middle child.
That is a very interesting question. You know, in our African system,
mm-hmm.
you know, we're in a very patriarchal system. And
yeah.
most cases, the boy, no matter how young is he, they are always the... When the father is not there, even when the father is there,
mm-hmm.
the boy is always deemed to be like more superior to the girls.
Okay.
you know, in our African patriarchal system.
Yeah.
So even if this is a second boy, even if it's a third boy or fourth boy, as long as he is the only boy in the child, then automatically when the father dies, he becomes, even before even the father dies,
right,
even on making important family decisions, they are also considered to be very crucial. Yeah, because he's regarded to be the, like, the owner of the family, especially if he's just one, that one will actually have more responsibility. So that will not even be affected by their better position.
Yeah.
But there are quite a number of now issues, dynamics that we then need to manage upon this one. Because normally when the boy is just like one boy, even this also even applies to the girl, normally they are also even spoiled because they are said they are just one. You know
what
I mean?
Yes.
And there's also even a tendency of parents even putting their property in the name of those children.
Very true.
And I've seen some parents being thrown out of their houses by children.
Ish.
Yeah, because they then, you know, they overdo it in terms of giving responsibility to the boy child.
Right. No, this is a very interesting subject, Elder, and I feel like we need more time to get into, we need to get deeper into each of these positions and the dynamics, how they play out, and the responsibility for each child, generally the way that it's been traditionally, and any improvements that we might be able to make on that. But thank you so much for coming through this morning. It's been an absolute pleasure chatting with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for me. Yeah, this is a very interesting discussion. Indeed, it needs more time.
Yes. Thank you so much. Look forward to getting deeper into it with you in the future. I will be in touch. Thank you, Elder.
Thank you very much. Good day.
All right. Family, that was Elder Alois Nyamazana speaking to us about the birth position politics. Very interesting subject that we just had there.
You are tuned in to Mid-Morning Empowerment here on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.